Appreciate Levi reading and appreciate the songs. The songbook being pulled, a different songbook pulled out. It takes me a little while to adjust, but I like having those different songs. And Night of Evan and stuff like that. Good stuff. Good stuff. All right. Looking forward to this study. Do you remember to turn on the pointer? I don't know who was last.
I have the last one.
Last one? Okay, Cole, if you're up for it. Question number one. Oh, I wanted to point out something. This is kind of like the before and the after. We got people down here. We got a crowd. You know, this is the inauguration right here. So, okay. Cole, if you're up for it. Why is Saul anointed, but then proclaimed to be a king later? Why does Samuel go into such detail about the events that will happen to Saul? What do some of the locations tell us about the state of sacrifice and worship in Israel?
So, it could be that it was just not Saul's time to be, for him to be announced as king for all Israel. Mm-hmm. So they start off easing into it before they make the big reveal. Another thing, this is just personal speculation. Maybe it's to avoid things like rebellion, because picking a king's a big deal in a country. And if there's not a very clearly defined heir for a country that already has a king,
right.
Civil war, things right. like that. So when they're in the stage where they're looking to establish a king, there are probably a bunch of people who want to be
mm-hmm.
king.
Mm-hmm.
So if Samuel goes through like the ceremonies with Saul, kind of like early on beforehand, then it helps establish his authority as the king chosen by God.
Yeah.
And I think Samuel goes into like really specific detail about these signs, because I think Saul is really reluctant and he has doubts. So I see a parallel between this and with Gideon. So Gideon was reluctant, mm-hmm. kind of had some doubts, so God worked with him
mm-hmm.
to
mm-hmm.
Ease him into it. So I think it's the same thing with Saul, where by being super specific, Saul will know that this isn't just some crazy coincidence, but that it's planned out and it's the Lord's will. But the reason why I think Saul is reluctant is whenever he meets his uncle in verses 13 through 16, he doesn't mention anything about the kingdom. He doesn't mention this kingship, so it seems like he's reluctant to take on this position. And this is going into too many other questions here, but whenever he meets with the prophets, it says there's a proverb that says that Saul was among the prophets or something. So that could be taken as like a slur that he's just with this like a random group of false prophets or just these whack job weirdos. It's like, what's this tall, handsome, wealthy son of Kish doing with the weirdo prophet? So it could be that Saul is reluctant to be associated with this. And these locations, these are locations with rich history
yes.
for Israel. So Rachel's tomb, it was near Bethlehem. Rachel was the mother of the tribe of Benjamin, of which Saul, he's of the tribe of Benjamin. So it's important to Israel, and it's important to
yep.
Saul specifically.
Right.
And that terebinth tree, it was near Bethel. It has a relation to Jacob and the story of the latter God. And Gibeah, we later find that that's where Saul's home city is. And then in Gilgal, that's where, when the people came from the wilderness, the wanderings, that's where they were circumcised. So there were other great events that happened at Gilgal. So Saul was supposed to be associated with these great events in Israel's history.
Yeah, no, I think you did an excellent job. And I agree 100%. These things were helping Saul see that Samuel knew what he was talking about. These things are happening, just like he said it was going to. Isn't that neat? Yeah, good, excellent job. A couple of different things. Well, does anyone else have any comments? Regarding regarding Saul not saying anything to his uncle. I wondered about that. We know in verse 6 and verse 9, where God gave him the Spirit. He had the Spirit of the Lord. So I kind of wondered if maybe that Spirit of the Lord didn't want Saul revealing it at this point. Just another way to look at it, maybe. I don't really know. He did behave like he was kind of shy and ashamed of it. Don't thrust me out there in the limelight just yet. I'm not ready. And part, a whole lot of this was getting him ready, wasn't it? Anyone else?
On that third question there, I started thinking a little bit differently about this than I have been. Because we've had a few questions here in 1 Samuel so far, kind of asking, you know, where's the tabernacle? Why are they just setting up worship kind of at these random, even maybe not so random, but scattered out places? Why isn't it confined into one spot? And then I realized that, wait a second, God is okay with all of this. He is at least acknowledging or using this group of prophets here who are going up to this place, and he uses them as a sign to show Saul that the Lord is on his side, and of course the Spirit of the Lord comes upon him there. Even with Samuel offering burnt offerings and sacrifices at Gilgal, just not necessarily at the tabernacle or on the brazen altar, but just at a different altar someplace else. So I think it's very interesting that this is where Israel is at this point in time, that it's more spread out, but in some ways it's maybe a little bit more spiritual also, as opposed to times past. Not that it totally is, because the people are still very hard against the Lord, but it's different, but it's better in some ways.
Mark?
Yeah, agree with what's been said. You know, and maybe somebody has a different opinion on this, and I'm just misreading it, but it looks like there's a test that Saul is given here that he doesn't succeed at, and that is, he's told you're going to see these signs, right, as you guys have pointed out, but then he's commanded that in verse 8, you shall go down before me to Gilgal, and surely I will come to you and offer burnt offerings and make sacrifices of peace offerings. 7 days you shall wait till I come and show you what you should do. And I don't see that Saul did that. Instead, it looks like Saul went back to his home after he saw the signs, and then he talked with his uncle. I think that's what he did instead. So, last week we talked a little bit about when do you start seeing Saul diverting from what he should do. And it looks to me, and again, maybe I'm just misreading this, but it looks to me like he doesn't do what the Lord asks. And later, he is crowned at Gilgal. In fact, in the next chapter, that's where he's crowned at Gilgal. And so maybe that's what's going on here. Maybe this is one of those proleptic things where chapter 11 is the conclusion of the Gilgal thing. But at the same time, I don't know. To me, it just looks like he sees the signs, and then he's supposed to go to Gilgal and wait 7 days. There's no waiting in chapter 11. And it looks to me like he wasn't willing to do what Samuel asked him to do. I don't know if anybody else has any opinion.
Yeah, I hadn't went that far in looking at what Samuel's behavior was. And part of it, Cole, you mentioned something early on in your explanation or your answering, that the tribes, Israel was a mess. There had recently been 40,000 Ephraimites killed. There had been a bunch of Benjamites killed. I mean, and I don't know what the time range is, but I bet it's generational. It's within that generation. These people know that there's a lot of angst among the congregation, among the tribes, in my opinion. So I agree with you. You're right on the money. I think there was a lot of anxiousness, and we'll see that at the end of the chapter, won't we, with these rebels? So, yeah. Anything else? All right, let's keep moving. Question number two. Oh, well, I had this. The Spirit of the Lord, Spirit of the Lord, the Spirit of the Lord came upon David. I mean, it was, and Terebinth tree. Terebinth tree is like 102 times Terebinth tree is mentioned. So it was a big deal, and the terebinth trees were pretty important. Okay, question number two for Austin, if you'd like it. What does it mean that the Lord gave him another heart? Did this mean that his personality changed and or override his free will? What can we learn about there being a company of prophets, and what might this tell us about the word of the Lord coming in these days versus the days of Eli?
So, as far as the gave him another heart aspect of this, I'm not 100% sure as far as what my answer might be. So James E. Smith said that this happens, basically, that God gave him another heart, and he says, okay, how did he do this? And his answer would be that it was through Samuel and through these actions, and that's why he's so specific with these things. And then it's because of this that Saul then turns around, and he starts feeling pretty good about things. As all of these things start coming to pass, he's gaining more and more in trust and in confidence and these types of things. So this is how God gave him another heart, is through Samuel's prophecy. But at the same time, in the previous verses, I forget which verse it was, like verse 7 or something like that, maybe verse 6, Samuel literally says, you will be turned into another man.
Verse 6. Yeah, I'm almost sure it's 6.
So,
then the Spirit of the Lord will come upon you, and you will prophesy with them and be turned into another man.
Okay, so whether this, the fact in verse 9 that he gave him another heart and the Spirit of God coming upon him later, if these are two kind of distinct things, then maybe we can say that it was through Samuel that God gave him another heart, and then the Spirit of God came upon him and he turned into someone, turned into another man. I don't know what the best answer really is for that. I don't think it overrode his free will. Personality change, possibly, because as we've kind of discussed here, he goes from being a timid person to, at least here, he's prophesying with these other prophets in kind of a bold fashion, in a bold enough fashion where people are starting to come up and, you know, who is this guy? Mm-hmm. This is nothing like who Saul is. So maybe it was, I don't know, a shot of confidence or whatever that was. It changed him from whatever his personality used to be, it changed him into another mm-hmm. man, so that he was borderline unrecognizable.
Yeah, even if it was just giving him confidence, as you pointed out.
So I don't think it overrode his free will, but mm-hmm. it did alter his personality in such a way. I think, like Cole said, you maybe said, all of this is being done on Saul's behalf. It's not really being done, and a little bit here for the people, I think, but this is to help Saul embrace who God wants him to be. So the other thing with the company of prophets, I really like this contrast here between Eli and Samuel. So the word of the Lord was scarce in the days of Eli. Eli was really the only person who knew what it sounded like to have the Lord talk to you, and he trained Samuel how to do that. Well, Samuel, it seems that he has taken this a step further, and now there's a whole group of prophets. Who knows how many prophets are in the land of Israel at this point in time. So Samuel has done far and above more what Eli, I think, ever did in establishing the word of the Lord and making sure that it was out there for the people to see. So I think that's really incredible.
You know, as far as Samuel giving up, or Saul not having free will, I mean, Saul certainly had free will. I mean, he made a decision to offer sacrifices that were his demise. You know, so he certainly had free will. And then that second, 1 Samuel chapter 7, verses 3 and 4 in the middle there, Israel put away their idols. And I'd like to think that Israel was moving toward being more spiritually minded. This is just a few chapters earlier. So it seems like they're trying to make some attempts, in my mind. Anyone else? Question number two. Bart.
One of the most, go back to your verses. I find verse verse 12 the most interesting verse? Obviously, it's all interesting. But verse 12, someone asks, but who is their father? And when I read that, I'm like, I don't really get what's going on here.
You're thinking Darth Vader, aren't you?
it's got a little bit of that vibe going on. But it's, you know, they've already said this is the son of Kish.
Mm-hmm.
That's the father, the earthly father. And again, this is kind of reading in between the lines. But it's almost like someone is observing the prophets, and he prophesies about Saul, who is, it's not, I'd have to know the Hebrew to know if it's actually singular, but it's like he's asking, who is Saul's father? In other words, is he a true follower?
When I saw verse 12, then a man from there answered and said, but who is their father?
Yeah.
That there, I thought he was talking about the prophets to establish their credibility. Who's their fathers? To your point, he knew, Sam, or that somebody knew Saul's father was Kish. But I was putting that, who's their father? I was putting that there on these other prophets. Anyone else? Mark or Austin?
One other thing. They know that he's the son of Kish. I think this hill that he's at, I think this is Gibeah. So this would have been basically his hometown. They would have known, been very familiar with him. So this is part of where some of this comes from, this confusion.
Yeah, Mark.
And something else we haven't mentioned that's odd about this passage, it says that he went to a garrison of the Philistines, and it's here. Is there a garrison of the Philistines in Gibeah?
Somebody suggested where this was located.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Right.
Birth, E-E-R-T-A, I don't remember what it was. That's odd too, isn't it? Going to the garrison of the Philistines. The Philistines aren't going to appreciate you guys putting a king in place. You know, we got a problem with that. And so it is odd. Anything else? Question number two. All right, let's do question number three, Hunter, if you'd like it. Where did Saul meet his uncle? Why didn't Saul tell his uncle about the kingdom? Verses 13 and 16 through 16.
All right. Well, for both questions, I can say that I'm not totally sure. I don't know. As far as the, in verse 13, it says he went to the high place. Austin just said it. Some commentators said it. Maybe this was his hometown. It kind of seems to be that way. As his uncle's there, his servants are there. His uncle's servants are there. So presumably his hometown. But it's also in chapter 9. I mean, Samuel meets Saul on the high place.
Mm-hmm.
So this the high place theme kind of pops up a couple times. So I'm not totally sure where exactly it was. I have a feeling it was his hometown, but I can't say that concretely. And then why did Saul tell his uncle about the kingdom? We're not really told for sure. I think Austin or somebody said this earlier, maybe he was apprehensive, or no, you said it, was apprehensive about all this and was not sure about it and didn't want to say anything before all this is revealed. As I was rereading through Samuel's instructions here in verse 2 at the end of it, these men come up to Saul and they say, we found the donkeys, blah, blah, blah. And now your dad's worrying about you, saying, what shall I do about my son? Then you shall go on forward from there. So it's almost as like, just ignore what they said and just keep going. It didn't say, tell them that I'm the anointed one now. So I don't know. Maybe it was part kind of, reading between the lines, maybe that was part of the instruction was to just stay silent and don't tell them anything. I'm not sure there. But, maybe someone has a more concrete answer than that.
Probably not. A little bit. Anyone else? Question number three. I got a few notes. Bart, go ahead.
Just as far as Hunter mentioned that he thought this was his home, the New English Bible and the Jerusalem Bible translate this as he went home.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
I mean, there's a lot of scholarly.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. Anyone else? Question number three. Austin?
I think Cole mentioned that there were kind of some signs or, feelings of Gideon with some of these things. And I can't help but, particularly looking at this chapter, and I wrote the questions for the next chapter today, there is some elements of Gideon where it's this, you know, he's unsure of himself. And I ask myself, you know, why didn't he want to tell about the kingdom? Maybe he didn't think his uncle was the best first person to tell about a kingdom. You know, maybe he's, everybody's got a crazy uncle. Maybe he's one of those crazy uncle people, and, you know, conspiracy theorists and all that. I don't know. Maybe it's due to his change of heart, and maybe he's wanting to wait on God's timing for all of this to come to pass. I'd like for that to be the reason.
Yeah.
Maybe it is just that he's still very unsure of himself. And still very timid about the whole thing. So I'm not real sure. I'd like for it to be because he's waiting on God.
Yeah.
I hope that's the reason.
Yeah. I did a little digging around this idea of this high place, verse 13. Saul's uncle suddenly there with him in verse 14. Some writers suggest this high place could be where Saul's family lived. I think that's what you were saying, Bart. I looked up this verse and that phrase high place in Strong's, it's H1116. High place is used 102 times in the King James. High places as places of worship include 1 Samuel chapter 9, verses 12 through 25, kind of what Hunter was talking about. These high places, you know, this idea of eating and sacrificing, you know, when Saul and the servant came, found Samuel, they were invited to go to a high place and eat, and they were going to offer sacrifices. I wish I'd have thought of it. I didn't think of it. Another regarding why didn't Saul tell his uncle about the kingdom? Might have been too busy trying to hide his oily hair. I thought that was, because your uncle's going to see that. It's like, okay, what's going on? What have you been doing? You know, so that might be, you know, Saul now has the Spirit of the Lord in him, verse 9. Verse 7, Samuel says, do as the occasion demands. So, again, the Lord might not have wanted him to spill the beans yet. We stone him. For God is with you. Okay, anything else? Question number 3. Question number 4. Dennis, if you'd like it. Why does Samuel go over the history of Israel before announcing their king? How was selecting a king a rejection of God when God had done all of these things to Saul, so they could have a king?
Kind of course speculation somewhat here. I thought back about chapter 8, 11 through 18, where it lines out what they could expect specifically
from
the king. And I kind of read between the lines and reworded it in my own sentence. Basically, I think he's saying, don't say that you weren't warned about the grand decision to ask for a king.
Yeah.
And also, along with that, be completely aware, for the record, so everybody's on the same page, be completely aware of how grateful and how appreciative you people are for rejecting the Lord God of heaven, basically.
Yeah.
That's my own wording of it. I don't know what else he would say. It's a reminder of them that they know what they've done, but here it is, time to do it.
Yep.
So let's be aware of what you just what we're doing. We're proceeding with what you want.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And then the second part, how was selecting the king? I'm not sure I understood the question exactly the way it was, but I answered basically because they were giving God a very undeserved vote of no confidence, even after all the great things that he had already done for them. They wanted to be like the nations around them. They wanted to have a king rule over them. So they kind of get God to the curb.
I think you're right on the money. I think you're exactly right.
Even though that king, you know, God's king and a heathen king are going to be different kings. Because, you know, God's king has got things over him and out in Deuteronomy about what kings are supposed to do, not do.
Yeah. But. What starts out as God's king, these guys typically can't handle it very well and get themselves into trouble, it seems. Anyone else? Question number 4. Let's see. God reminded Israel that he'd done for them, that he would continue to protect them, that you rejected God asking for a king. Oh, I was going to tell my butcher knife story right here. So when I was 7 or 8 years old, we did family vacation down in Kentucky all the time, Paducah, Kentucky area, and I was a little kid and wanting to do stuff, and I kept pestering, I don't know if it was my mother or my grandmother, I wanted a butcher knife. I wanted to play with a butcher knife, and I was relentless, I guess. They can't get a butcher knife. And I'm out in the yard with this butcher knife, and I'm chopping up limbs, and it was cool, but I had to hold them still. And I caught my thumb right there and just about cut the end off my thumb. So the people, my comparison is the people asking for a king. I was asking for a knife, and they were asking for a king, and it got them in a bunch of trouble, didn't it? We'll see this for generations, hundreds and hundreds of years. Don't give your children knives. Okay, anything else on number four? All right, let's look at number five. Oh, what's wrong? Uh-oh, this could be trouble. Start over. It's number five.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the last one. Grant, would you like it? Okay. What does it say of Saul that he was hiding among the equipment when his name was called? Why were the people excited about Saul being their king? What did the book that Samuel wrote explain? And why was it set before the Lord? Why did the rebels not bring any gifts? Had a bunch there.
Yeah, it's like five questions. The first one we kind of addressed a couple of times already. We said sometime again that Saul seemed to be rather humble at this point in his life. And so maybe he was hiding there because he just didn't really want to step forward at that time. He just kind of was like, well, not yet, I'm going to hide back over here. And so it's like, no, you have to go find him. He's over here. Yes, you were the one. Get up here. That, or perhaps he was just given a task that was not considered a very high task for him. Maybe he was considered not as important to be there. Maybe, but most likely because
Well, I happen to think of this somewhere in my readings. I think writers were suggesting that Saul was maybe 30 or 40 years old at this time and had a wife, and I don't know about kids. We know he's going to eventually have some kids. So I didn't verify that, but you know, there's other things that might have been going on. Yeah, anyway, go ahead.
So for the second question, why were the people excited about Saul being their king? It's mentioned a couple of times back in chapter 9, verse 2, that he was a very handsome man.
Mm-hmm.
Right here we see that he's a very tall person, which your first slide should have been great, just a head and shoulders above Samuel there. So somebody who definitely stood out, and people would say, yes, that is our king, who that they could really look up to and say, mm-hmm. we're proud to have this person as our king. And especially if he was a humble person, they'd say, yes, he's a king who would like to follow after his example. And also, that's what they wanted, as we've seen with the whole
right.
They kept asking for the king, maybe they didn't say it directly, but they certainly had, there was grumblings for wanting to be like the other nations
and
having the king. Yep. So they were getting what they wanted, so it's like, yes, we're getting what we want. Finally, God is listening to us. So the third one there, what did the book of Samuel, the first part of the question seems, what did the book that Samuel wrote explain? So it says, in verse 25, and Samuel explained to the people the behavior of royalty. So yeah, essentially how the king is supposed to behave. These are essentially things that God is telling the king how the king is supposed to act. Have one wife and not multiply livestock for himself. And so the idea is, yeah, this is how the king is supposed to act. And then, why was it said before the Lord? I think to show essentially that these are commandments from the law, from God. These are commands of they're not just suggestions from Samuel, that this is part of what God has agreed to put this person in charge. And then for question D, why did the rebels not bring any gifts? Verse 27 says, what the rebels had said, how can this man save us? So they certainly had reservations as far as whether or not this person was really up to the job. Maybe because they still relied upon God, or wanted to rely upon God, or that they were wanting to rely upon somebody else, not people would say one way or the other. And Saul kind of just holds his peace here, which probably goes back to essentially his humility of not really wanting to say, I'm in charge, it has to be my way. It's like, okay, that's fine. I see what you're doing.
Yeah, no, that's good. Very good. Anyone else? Question number five to add. Well, let's see. again, that first part, I think Saul's still trying to understand what's happening to him. His world's been kind of upset for a few days now. So think about this. Think about this. By not doing our Christian duties, brethren, we're hiding from our spiritual crowns. When we don't do our Christian duties, we're hiding from our crown, our spiritual crowns. Saul was hiding from an earthly crown. Ours is spiritual. We have responsibilities as Christians on earth. And so we've got to watch it. We might have more fault, responsibility than Saul, because we're dealing with a spiritual crown. Dennis, you got your finger kind of going. I kind of wondered if...
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I'm just thinking about, this might be a little bit out there, but I think the last question about the rebels not bringing gifts, I thought about the Lord, and the Lord, of course, he's older than, and the wise men bringing gifts. It's only a few people brought gifts to him.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of them were rebels.
Right, yeah, that's true. Yeah, the rest of them are rebels, aren't they?
Yeah, and 1 Peter 2:4 talks about the Lord, he was rejected by men, chosen by God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good. Anyone else? Question number 5. I also had trouble with C. I kind of wrestled that one around, part C. What did the book that Samuel wrote? It made me wonder, which one of these kings made this book disappear? I think Kaufman compared Moses and the old law to what Samuel was writing here about royalty and how they're supposed to act. It just, that first crooked king, he's getting rid of that book. You know, we don't want that around. And so I think that's a real possibility. That's good. Anyone else? Anything else? I appreciate everyone's participation and involvement.